All right, it looks like the door is shut. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes? All right. So for those that do not know who I am, so my name is Kimberly Rogalski, board member from Scott's Miracle-Gro. So I was asked to introduce our next presenter here. Thank you to the last panel as well. A couple other thank yous. We actually had the first break was thank you to Chromascapes for that break this morning. And then the break that we just had was LoadScan, so thank you for those sponsors. We'll appreciate your support for the council and this whole industry. So kind of, as we just heard, right, how do we recruit women into this industry? Now we're going to have a little bit of a different approach, right? So we're very pleased to welcome Dr. Cabot Jaffe. So he is the CEO of AlignMark. He has over 35 years of experience working with organizations' human resource needs. He's been instrumental in the field developing innovative human resource products and services used to improve employee effectiveness through staffing, sourcing, and recruiting. 100% connected to what we were just talking about and taking it and really extending it to the entire industry and how do we get better at this. So really excited to see what he's going to teach us this morning. It sounds like it's going to be interactive, as you heard, right? So have your phones ready. It sounds like there's going to be some polls for us to learn about each other and learn how we get better. And with that, please welcome.
Thank you very much. Because I could probably talk about this for days, I'm going to skip the obligatory joke at the beginning, but if we have time at the end, I'll bring it back up. You'll have an opportunity to retext to engage in the polls as they come up. But I do look forward to really piggybacking on what was already discussed in the previous panel. But I also want to highlight that recruitment really can't be talked about without retention. Those two really go hand in hand. Because if we do everything to recruit in the right people, and yet we can't keep them, then there's still something wrong, and we're still spinning our wheels. And this is a problem that is crossing multiple industries, multiple positions, whether you're talking about highly skilled labor, semi-skilled labor, or not as skilled labor. Being able to recruit and retain is a key objective for many companies. My goal today, because I have so much to say, is not to have you be able to figure out everything I've talked about, because I'm never that clear, but it is to have you take away two or three nuggets that may be applicable to you. What might work in your company, in your area of the country? Because not every situation is the same either. And different solutions will be right for one company, then for another company. Could have solutions for different kinds of positions. You know, some may be very simple, some may be very complicated. And so my goal, again, is just to have you walk away with two or three nuggets that you may want to go a little bit deeper that apply to you. As we go through this, feel free to ask questions. I normally get up and walk around, but I would have everyone in stitches as I fell off the stage, so I am going to try and plant myself here. So, one thing that we know is people make the difference in your organization, and it's been proven over and over again. Companies with superior recruiting and hiring practices end up with better people and therefore end up being able to outperform their competitors, because ultimately everyone can get the same technology, everyone can get the same commodities. People make a big difference, and so that is the focus. Today, just to get us started, this is for those that are interested in participating in the poll. If you have, again up top, texted AlignMark POL 914 to 37607, pick A or B, A for true, B for false, and this is a little simple practice question just to get us focused on, it's not just quantity, but it's got to be quality. It's got to be the right people, and not everyone is right for your individual jobs. Not everyone is right for your individual company. Is there a culture fit? Is there a logistics fit? Is there a practical fit? Do they meet what you're trying to do? And so this is quite easy. A number of companies, especially in industries like this, you've got some companies that have a history of, we've been in business 50 years, we're a family-run business, we've had employees that have been with us for 30 years. We don't have a turnover problem. we're great at retention, and therefore we don't have to recruit. That's still going on in today's world. I'll argue that 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road, that's going to change, and we're going to talk a little bit about some demographics. As we've seen, always somebody here is just a little bit concerned with it. But you will need to be concerned. So these are live results from the poll. Obviously, the majority of the audience is hugely concerned because finding people, especially with the conditions that have happened over the last 4 or 5 years, is of importance. So I just want to talk about this. Every company's goal should be to identify, hire, and retain top performers. Because with top performers, we will always do better than average performers or non-performers. And when I talk about top performers, I'm not just talking about skills. There's at least 10 qualities that make for a good employee that have nothing to do with what technical skills they may have. Are they a quick learner? Are they interested in learning? Time and attendance, effort, initiative, teamwork. Those are all things that can be independent of whether somebody has the actual skills to drive a piece of equipment, or can they learn to do something. Or so when I talk about top performers, I'm wanting to look at a total picture of what we're talking about. And your goal as an organization should be to identify those top performers. And then once you get them, continue to develop them. Because a lot of times, unfortunately, we are hiring average performers. But that doesn't mean we can't build them into top performers once we get them on the job. Hence the recruiting, our goal is to find top, but retention, our goal is to develop those into top performers once they're on the job as well. So I want to break down today's discussion into kind of, this is an agenda, but it is also something that mirrors talent acquisition processes all over the place. One of the things we need to do, and a lot of what we heard in the previous panel, is we need to source people into our application process, whatever that is. We need to get people interested in applying to our particular company. We heard there were some females out there that I think I know 7 out of these 10 requirements. How do we get them to apply systematically and automatically? So one of the things we'll talk about is how do we source and get people into the top of the funnel? Once you get them, make sure that the process of getting them from that initial contact through to hire or offer is applicant friendly, is valuable, is something that you're not losing people along the way. What gets measured gets paid attention to. You'll hear me say this over and over again. When you talk about talent acquisition and retention, we want to be able to make sure that we have certain goals that we can put in place that will allow us to measure what we're trying to accomplish. And then managers, what's their input? Obviously, there's a little bit of input on the selection side. There's a huge impact on the retention side, and we'll talk a little bit about retention. I put Q&A at the end, but please don't wait until the end if you have questions come up. I just can't put it all over the slide. Overlaying all this is we now have generational differences in the workplace that are more different than they ever have been before. So I do want to touch on this because it is what is making up the workplace itself. We've got 70 million baby boomers that in 2005, 2008 all wanted to retire. That recession hit, it delayed retirement, we still had 70 million people in the workplace, didn't retire. They're now ready to retire, they're able to retire, and there's not enough from Generation X to backfill all those positions, so the people are coming from the Millennials and the Gen Xers. We're going to have plenty of people out there. How do we get them interested in our particular job and our particular company is something that we'll discuss. It also will have an impact for leadership indications. Sorry about this. Well, some people on this side are going to have a neck problem. So the next question on the polling says the majority of our senior leaders are 33 years or older. Those people making decisions for the company, those people involved in the company. A for true, B for false. So far we have 100% true. Oh, 22%, 18% false, 82% true. I feel like a horse caller. And the winner is 87% true. Why do I even bring this up? That is because 33, 34 years old is about the cutoff. I call them exennials. They're the crossover, the microgeneration between half Generation X and half millennial. They've got some different characteristics. But what you've got, 87% of you out there have people from Generation X or older making decisions based on what people in the millennial and Gen Zers want. And I'm not going to talk about Gen C, Gen COVID, new generation coming up. They're only 6 years old, but they will be entering the workforce, and they will have similar expectations to millennials and Gen Y. Gen Z, sorry. So, one of the things I do want to show are some pictures of how to... Oh, now it's back. Okay. We've all heard it. You use it when your company... Our company's different. Our positions are different. Our part of the country is different. When now we talk about the younger generations, we can look at how they communicate, what their expectations are. And they are different. And I can say younger because I am part of the baby boomers, but the millennials and the Gen Zers are different. You know, this conversations with best friends, communication, it looks very different. Date nights, who knows what's going on. And it's not that it's a unfriendly date night, it's just the new norm in how they communicate. Coffee with friends is not amongst four people. It could be amongst 16 people because there are multiple conversations going on. But what we know is, here's just a set of fun facts for the millennials, and these numbers geometrically grow every year. So this says 81% of Gen Z, 68% of millennials admit to texting on a daily basis, compared to 47% for Gen Xers. Those numbers are already up over 90% for both Gen Z and millennials. This data is 1 year old only. 73% of millennials believe the use of technology is important. 100% of Gen Z say they use the internet daily. Millennials introduced to technology. I still have a rotary phone. My kids have no idea, much less my grandkids, on what this thing is that has this dial on it. It just doesn't exist. So, how well does your process, how well does your message, how well do your systems match up to really how we know how they communicate? And just in general, there are some different characteristics of these younger generations. They are independent, way more independent. They've grown up in divorced households. They've been latchkey kids. They've been empowered and motivated. We've all heard of helicopter parents. I don't know if you've heard of Moses or bulldozer parents. Helicopter parents come in and they take care of everything when something goes wrong. Bulldozer or Moses parents part the sea to let their kids go through without any obstacle or any resistance. They just clear, you know, the scandal over the parents that paid to have their kids get into Harvard and get into the Ivy League schools. Those are the Moses parents. They part the sea. They think they're good at multitasking. They clearly want to use technology. So how well, again, does your company, from a recruiting and retention standpoint, stand up to what these individuals want? Again, I am flying through this. We talked about, okay, that's how the generational gap kind of overlays what we're talking about. And the first thing we need to do is source your talent pool. You're never going to hire someone you never speak to. You're never going to hire somebody that never gets into your pipeline in your application process. So how do we attract people to, first, the industry? We heard it great, you know, how do we get more non-traditional applicants and candidates into the industry and therefore into the specific goals for your organization or application process for your organization? The importance of using existing employees and applicants. I will guarantee you your best source of ongoing hires will be employee referrals. Both quality, not necessarily quantity, but certainly from a quality standpoint. How can you then use certain applicants? I wonder if I can't stand much still. How can you use, and then you can also look at, okay, how do we advertise? What does successful advertising look like? And I just want to bring up a few things that certain industries and other industries are doing. Community outreach has been hugely successful. I don't know how involved you are in the community, but spreading the word, even if you're a very small operation, you have the opportunity to be involved, get people to understand what your value proposition is to the community and to the potential applicant that comes in there. Advertising, obviously, just in this case, it's become a driver. You can look for laborers, you know, doing good in filling your city. We're looking for, you know, no skills, no problem. We will train you. There's advertising that make people understand, even though I might not be experienced, I can still be a potential candidate for your particular job. This is a real billboard that's used in a bunch of cities where this Knife River is. Earn $3 million. Ask us how. Obviously, it's over a period of time. It's not going to be a yearly salary for a driver. But will it intrigue somebody enough to say, okay, I'm at least willing to talk to you? That's the first step. I'm at least willing to put my name in the hat in order to potentially become a candidate for your organization. Other facts. Job posts get 36% more applications if it's accompanied by some form of video. Doesn't have to be part of the application, but video, again, keep in mind, the number one channel right now in terms of subscribers, YouTube. Everyone watches YouTube. They're not reading the newspapers anymore. They're not looking at just text-only advertisements, whether it's on the internet or not. 40% of people respond better to visual information than plain text only. And when asked, again, when we try and cater and understand that younger generation, technology and the use of technology is key. So if you are not using technology, it's sending a message that says you might not be a fit for this organization. I know video's coming. It's a thing of the present. It's a thing of the future. For those, well, I'll ask you all, how much video do you use in your hiring process? That can be employee testimonials on your website. That can be part of your application process. It can be, you know, recruitment videos. You see the results. 85% really use none right now. Even more, 93, the winner is. So, the reason I bring this up again is we need to cater to those younger generations. They want video. They're used to using video. They're not used to reading. How do we do that? So how do we look to find specifically the younger generation worker? One of the things they want is video. And I'm not saying this has to be complicated. It can be cell phone video. It can be testimonials, it can be a recruiting video, it can be a 30-second blurb on your company and what you want. Also, we can't rely on a single source for posting our jobs anymore. They're all over the place, especially when you talk about non-traditional applicants. I would encourage you to expand your thoughts around where should we be posting our jobs? Because one of my favorite quotes from, I believe it's Einstein, not Einstein, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If I'm posting the same place over and over and over again, you're not going to get any different results. You're not going to get any non-traditional applicants. You're going to get that same homogeneous group. So I would encourage you again to be able to explore other avenues. Don't drive people to technology only and tech space. I'll talk about that in a minute. Market your message short and precise. This can't be a long process. It needs to be very short, obviously, and precise. School job fairs, community outreach, communicate to your non-hires. Get in touch back with people very quickly. The younger generation is happy hearing, no, you're not a good candidate for us, if they hear it. Whatever they experience, they're also going to communicate with 20 of their closest and dearest friends, or 2,000 of their closest and dearest friends, depending on their following. Good experiences get published. Negative experiences get published. If you're talking to a Gen Zer and they never hear back from you, even if you don't want them, and they post it, you've just lost potentially 10, 20, 50 applicants. If you have an applicant that posts a positive experience, you potentially just picked up, with no extra advertising costs, 10, 20, 50 more applicants because, hey, my friend liked it, they thought it was cool, let me go give it a shot. So you're using, and communication is key to them. They expect it and they want it. So I want to talk about, and I think on this one you can use multiple selects. You can type in A, B, C, D, or E, or all of the above. Which job boards are you using? LinkedIn, Facebook, Indeed, probably are the top three. There are others, obviously. So everyone here, as of right this second, is using some form of job posting on a job board. For those that are using LinkedIn and Facebook, I'm just going to kind of tell you the numbers. For certain jobs, for most jobs, Facebook has 2.6 billion users at this point in time. LinkedIn has 70 million. Where are you getting most people? Where are you getting your biggest bang for your buck? Now, Facebook will eventually win the war for recruiting. There are always going to be certain positions that are advertised on LinkedIn, but if you're talking about non-skilled labor, if you're talking about semi-skilled labor, entry-level into the workforce, the organization, there are way more your candidates on Facebook than are on LinkedIn. If they are on LinkedIn, they may have a profile. They probably have five or less connections, and they haven't posted anything in the last 5 years. Just my opinion, backed by some research. So I would encourage you to, if you are tied into Facebook, into job boards, continue to evaluate and look at where's the biggest bang for the buck, Facebook versus LinkedIn versus Indeed, what you're getting. More importantly, and we'll get to this when we talk about measures of effectiveness, are you getting hires through these? Which one are you getting disproportionate reds, yellows, greens when you look at this? So once we get people interested into the funnel, we want to be able to then process them through the hiring funnel and not have them drop out of the hiring funnel. At the bottom of this funnel, I continue to show red, yellow, green. I don't care what your definition of red, yellow, green is, but you all in your mind have, here's a candidate, wow, they're absolutely green, I want to go after them, they're high priority. These yellows, if I didn't have enough greens, I certainly want to talk to them, I certainly want to interview them, I might hire them and try and develop them. And then you've got your reds, which say, I could probably hire them, but my expectation is they probably won't be here 30 days from now, or flat out, I can't hire them. They don't meet the background, they don't meet certain minimum qualifications, so your goal is to hire greens and yellows. Well, if you get them in the top of the funnel and they're dropping out because of your process, then you're going to not be able to offer them a job if they just ghost you, so to speak. So the applicant hiring or application and hiring process.
Last time it came back, I don't remember how.
Not a poll yet, so we're all right. How many of you measure applicant expectations? That's a rhetorical question, but it's something that more companies are paying attention to. What do they expect? And are you trying to meet what they expect, or are you trying to meet and do what's making you most efficient? How do you establish your company's value proposition to them before you ever get to speak to them? Because they're making decisions the whole way through the process, from their first exposure to your website or your job application process, or if you're asking them to submit a resume, they're starting to form an opinion about whether you're right for them. And believe me, it used to be, again, 20 years ago, the company could say, if you aren't willing to jump through these hurdles and hoops, you're not right for us. If you're Google, if you're big companies that everyone wants to work for, you can still do that. Most of us can't. We've got to set and establish that employee value proposition to get them to the next step in the hiring process as early in the process as possible. Is your process geared towards the applicant, or is your process geared towards company personnel that are responsible for hiring? Whether you're a hiring manager, the owner of the company, or an HR recruiter, who are we catering to? Who should we be catering to? Obviously, we need to use some form of technology, but there is a good and a bad of using too much technology. So I do want to briefly just talk about the evolution of talent acquisition. You go back to the 40s through the 70s, before this thing called the internet and electronics and everything else. Hey, just-in-time recruiting, read about a job opening, either come visit, send your resume, maybe you get a first HR screen or a first interview, then a second interview, and then we'll decide. You keep fast forwarding, and even with new technology, companies have not changed that process. So the process now, it uses technology, but most companies still say, okay, I have to read about an ad somewhere, and then there's some first step. Come in and visit us, submit your resume, fill out this online form. Then somebody reviews that, gets in touch with them, tries to play phone tag, sends them an email, sends them a text. But the process hasn't changed, but the tools have. I'd argue, and we'll talk in a minute, I think the process needs to change. How many people are familiar or use applicant tracking systems as part of their operation? And an applicant tracking system is where the company can post physical jobs that are requisitions that they apply to. Yep, as expected, applicant tracking systems are a great technology to accomplish a lot, but they're not overly applicant friendly. They are compliance friendly, they're process friendly, but they're not applicant friendly. And the reason I say that is because traditionally the process is, okay, search for our jobs. For those that have an applicant tracking system, those companies typically want that to be the first step in the process. Somebody has to go there. They have to actually register. I'm not willing to register. I don't want emails from you yet. I can search some jobs, but I'm not getting enough information on the company. I want more information before I'm willing to give you all of this information. Oftentimes, they register. Then they can start filling out an online application, or they can have it parse their resume. And it does not a great job of filling in all the blanks, so they have to go fix it. And it becomes, then somebody may get in touch with me. I get the automated email at the end saying, hey, thanks, we have your information. Maybe somebody gets in touch with me. I don't know whether they like what I submitted yet. I don't know if they don't like what they submitted yet. So I'm continuing to go look for other opportunities that are more friendly. Then I finally get a call, then I get my first interview, then I get my second, then maybe I get my offer. This is a process that is very process-friendly, very recruiter-friendly, very organizationally friendly, not very generational, younger-friendly to what they want and expect. We do a mystery applicant process. If you're familiar with the retail industry, you've got the mystery shopper goes in, pretends they want to buy something, sees how well they're treated, sees what they can do from a shopping standpoint. We do a mystery applicant process every year. And we continue to be amazed that the average, and this is cross-industry, but the average application time takes a candidate 20 to 90 minutes in order to get through it before they ever get to speak to somebody. It's mostly text-based. Everything online, everything in the applicant tracking system is primarily text-based. And they may or may not receive a response as to what's next that's qualitative. They get a response, thanks, we got your information. That happens. And from the company's perspective, there's very little differentiation between who are my highest probability candidates and who are my lowest probability candidates. If I'm a recruiter, if I'm a hiring manager and I have a big need, I'm taking the first 10 that meet the qualifications, and I may miss numbers 11 through 90 if you have that many applications. One thing I didn't mention is this is an important issue whether you have tons of applicants or very few applicants. You need to be efficient. You need to find the right people. If we don't have enough people to fill our jobs, it's really important we make the right decision the first time around. If I've got high unemployment and loads of applicants, you don't want to just hire the first 10 because you may be missing the diamond in the rough that may be number 11th in your stack. So you need an easy process to get through all that information in a quality way and identify immediately who are your greens, who are your high probability candidates. Because oftentimes we're spending too much time chasing down and playing phone tag with people that end up being yellows and reds. We've got to get over. Next question, our companies require resumes to be submitted. This could be for entry-level jobs. It could be for higher-level jobs. I would argue for your non-skilled, semi-skilled labor, asking them to submit a resume is an immediate turnoff. They don't have them. They don't want to create them. They don't feel like they need them. Maybe, and the quality of the resume is based on the quality of their network that helped them put together and how put it together. No one's ever been better in person than I've met, than I've seen on their resume. People do exaggerate. Exaggerate a little, exaggerate a lot, you're always going to exaggerate. So for certain positions, I would argue, don't require a resume. You're starting to lose people. Remember, we're talking about processing people through the funnel. We're losing them as soon as we put any hurdle in, which they say, doesn't send the right image, I don't have a resume, I'm going to go see the next talent competitor you have down the road. Because keep in mind, when you talk about what applicants you're going after, you're not just competing against your industry competitors, you're competing against every company in your geographical location that they'd be a candidate to hire for. Other manufacturing processes, service drivers, you know, production. So you're not just competing against other industry competitors, you're competing against everyone in the area that they could go apply for as well. So, today's challenges. I guarantee you, or I would think at least one of these, if not three or four of these, apply to you. We're getting too many unqualified candidates. Every person you have turned over from your organization has been your own hiring mistake. Not saying it's all your fault, but you've made a mistake. You've put them through your process. If your turnover rates are a little high, you've got a process that you can adjust so that they come down because you're hiring your own mistakes through whatever your process is. A lot of times, a good indication of whether somebody will be successful is, are they currently employed? Would you rather, to all other things equal, somebody that has a long and current work history, or somebody that's had three or four jobs or is currently out of work? Again, if we're hedging our bets, we'd probably want to be able to go after those that are currently working as a good source of candidates. I'm not saying exclude the others, but is your process friendly to engaging them and getting them through the process? Because they don't have to change jobs. They're not interested, but we want them to see something that says, I do want to think about changing jobs. I do want to think about changing an industry. Yes, I'm in this office environment. Wow, this company looks great. So we do want to be able to find and easily engage currently employed job seekers. They're not job seekers yet. We want to convert them to that. Conversion. Those people we want to say yes. Offer to higher ratios. Worst thing in the world is we send out 10 offers and all 10 of them turn us down. They're turning us down for some reason. We want to only hire those or offer to those that we think also want us. It's a good marriage between employer and employee. They like the employee value proposition. They like what you've shown about flexible schedules, whether it's salary expectations, career development. What's your employee value proposition? They've heard it before the offer, not just from the hiring manager or the recruiter. They hear it from second one, and they're able to say, yes, let me go to the next step. Yes, let me go to the next step. You could have too few applicants. You need to be efficient, obviously. And I've never heard a company in the last 10 years that says, oh, yeah, I've got more money and more people to throw at recruiting. It's always the opposite. Do more with less, especially as it applies to recruiting. And you have this web generation, I'm not even including this in the millennials or Gen Zers. You've got Gen Xers and baby boomers that have bought into the web technology. If you've ever gone to buy a car, make a major purchase, most people that are part of this web gen go and do their research before they ever talk to the car salesperson. I know what I want. I know how much it should cost. I know what the value proposition is. I know it meets what I need. Recruiting is no different. Before I go talk to somebody, I will need to be able to gather information around, is this right for me? What are the salary ranges? What are the career development opportunities? What are the flexible scheduling opportunities? Also, what are the negatives? Last thing we want to do is turn into salespeople that say, this job is the best thing since sliced bread. And reality is it doesn't meet their expectations. So what we really want to do is set realistic expectations throughout the whole process, the good and the bad. We want engagement with people. We want to be able to differentiate our applicants very early. And engaging, I mean interactive. We want those people to see something and say, I'm willing to give you another 30 seconds. I'm willing to give you another minute. Information exchange shows mutual respect. It says, I'm not just asking. I'm doing some giving as well. Obviously, we need to use technology. We want to close the loop in a timely manner. So if this is a desired state of affairs, we know what the current trends are. You need to decide how well do you match up to what these applicants are now expecting. There's a lot of new trends being used out there by some organizations to recruit young talent. Video interviews, Zoom. Everyone got real comfortable and familiar with Zoom over the last 2.5 years and Teams, and you know, Skype has been around for 20 plus years now. Video interviewing is not new, but it's become big. And so what does that look like? It's a cost savings because you're saving somebody a trip. It's a time savings. It's process improvement. It's not changing your process. That video interview is still typically happening when the interview would happen. Makes it a little more convenient. There are things called video-based job applications and chatbots. We've all seen it now. Every website you go to, a little icon pops up in the bottom right-hand corner saying, hey, chat with us now. Well, think about another chatbot right next to that that says, hey, interview now. And it goes through an automated process that allows them to interview. Texting. Texting's big. Does these generations, and I am making a blanket statement, would rather receive a text than a phone call. They don't want to talk to you on their phone. A lot of them haven't even set up their voicemail. If you're using a lot of time trying to call people, you're wasting a lot of time texting them. And then something called just-in-time and proximity services, which is simply, think about driving by your facility, and anyone that has an app on their phone, it gets pushed a notification that says, we're hiring. It is your outbound help wanted ad. It's pushing it to them. Right then and there, you know it's somebody driving by your facility. It's something that now you're not asking them to see it, you're putting it in front of them. I mentioned video-based and chatbot as a possibility. These are probably some of the newer technologies and a little bit different. It becomes adaptive and interactive. As a first step, think about somebody coming on, interacting, hearing your 30-second elevator pitch. Why is it good to work for us? What's our value proposition? We have great benefits. We pay. We have flexible schedules. We're looking for anyone. We're willing to develop you. If you want to work next to a leader in the industry, here's the place to be. Those are all just examples of an employee value proposition in 30 seconds. Then get into questions and answers. It could be different kinds of questions. Where'd you hear about us? Facebook, LinkedIn. Now at the end, you can start doing tracking on which one's giving us green candidates. Are you interested? What's your salary expectations? I want $100 an hour. We know we can disengage with that person or not spend a whole lot of time with them because we know even if they take our job, they're not going to last long because we're not going to be able to meet their needs. How important is career development to them? If it is, hey, let's talk about our training and development, the number of people that we have bring in from entry level into leadership positions. That's what our company does. If we don't have that and they want it, again, ultimately they're not going to be a good fit. You may get them short term, but you're not going to get them long term, and that's when we get into some of the retention. So this is short. It's a 5-minute experience. It collects a whole lot of information that allows both parties, the applicant and the company, to say, yes, we're a good fit for each other. Let's have an interview or let's get you to the front of the line. You can do the same thing via chatbot. Doesn't use as much video, uses text. Again, they like the text. They can just respond, hey, what's your name? Shorter answers. You're not showing your value proposition as much. It's written, but they are used to getting text. There's a lot of value in these kinds of applications versus traditional applications. You're doing active recruiting from second one. You're not waiting for them to get through an application process. It's interactive versus one-way data gathering. You get feedback on every question as an applicant, not just at the end 2 weeks later and in the interest of time. So what I would argue is there's a shift that's needed that you should shift the process from you collecting a whole lot of data before you're making an evaluation to allowing them to collect some data as well from second one. You've got to do what I call active recruiting from second one of your hiring process. Interested in the industry, interested in your company, and then interested in a job. Make it friendly for them. Not just friendly, although, by the way, this will make it more friendly for your hiring managers and recruiters because they're the ones that are going to save a lot of time not speaking to people that they should never speak to in the first place. Measures of effectiveness. Again, I said it early. By background, this is what I truly believe in. What gets measured gets paid attention to. Think back to grade school. Somebody raises their hand and says to the teacher, is this going to be on the test? Teacher says, no. What happens? Everyone throws their pencil down. They start talking with each other. Nobody pays attention. Same thing's true in business. What gets measured gets paid attention to. Whatever your KPIs are, that's what your organization is paying attention to. So when you talk about talent acquisition and effectiveness, this is free form. Type in some of the things that you use to measure your talent acquisition effectiveness and or your retention effectiveness. Try to keep these as yes, no. But I'll give you some hints that most of you therefore are saying none of the above or none. Okay. What are some important measures to pay attention to? For each company it will be different. What are you trying to accomplish? What is it that you hope to gain? Time to fill a position, number of applicants, time to get somebody an offer, interview to hire ratios, hire to offer ratios, retention rates. Very few companies challenge the recruiters to impact retention rates. Because they say, hey, I found you all the people I could. It's your job to keep them to operations or to post-hire. Well, if they're not finding the right people, turnover is still going up. If they're finding the right people and it's on the manager, then absolutely they may be right, but they should share in using that as a potential measure of effectiveness as to how well your recruiters or hiring operation is doing. Is quantity or quality more important to you? Something you need to decide. Could be different. How do you measure it? Is it simply number of applicants? Is it number of hires? Again, what you put down on paper to measure, and I would encourage you to start small. Progress over perfection. Baby steps. Pick one. Put it in writing. Talk about it in the organization and say, what can we do in order to help? And then importance of diversity and inclusion. We heard a great panel. How do we get more women into the industry? If it's not a goal of yours at the organization level, I'll argue you may do some things, but it'll be lip service, and you won't accomplish what your true goal might be. How do we grow women in the workforce from 20% to 30%? How do we grow them in the labor force at each of the positions, whether it's leadership or entry-level positions? If that's important to you as an organization, set a goal. Now you can put things in place that allow you to help meet that goal. And it's a lot more likely to get paid attention to. I mentioned the manager impact, and I'm going to breeze through some of this. Interview, manager impact, obviously, big impact on retention. People quit people, not companies. Show me somebody that loves their manager, feels like they have good development opportunities, getting their needs met. They're not going anywhere else for a quarter more. They're not going anywhere else maybe for even a dollar more. Yes, some cases will always be an exception. This person needs to make more. Show me somebody that really dislikes their manager and feels that the company is not supporting them. They're going to go for 25 cents less. You're going to lose them. They may give you some explanation. But we need to focus on the importance of the manager and do they have the skills to keep people? How many of you use interviewer training? Make sure that they're able to ask the right questions. It's got to be more than, hey, you like sports, I like sports, you're going to be good. It's a bad interview question. Tell me why or give you a situation on why they will be successful is things that are much better. We need to streamline the process for managers. Managers aren't professional interviewers. They don't want to interview. They don't want to have to interview. Whether you include the hiring manager of who they'll work to or not, that's a practical consideration. Is it even possible? But if you've gone through interviewer training, it shouldn't be a matter of skills or fit. Anyone should be able to interview that candidate and make a good hiring decision. And this is also then the transition to onboarding and retention. So when we talk about retention, again, we may have to hire some reds or yellows. Our goal is to turn them into greens and still keep them. If we're hiring reds and we don't see potential, your goal should be to cut your losses as quickly as possible. It's the old adage, is it better to have somebody versus nobody? That'll be different for each individual company. I said this, people quit people, not companies. What does your onboarding look like? Training development, you need to walk the talk. Set realistic expectations. You can't tell them, yes, you get breaks, 15-minute breaks every 30 minutes, if in reality they get 15-minute breaks every 2 hours. Meeting expectations, one of the biggest reasons why companies will lose faith and not trust what you tell them. The proof's in the pudding. You've all heard that. What gets told to them needs to be reality. We've also heard about recently the quiet quitter. So turnover's a problem. Turnover costs money. It's very easy to see. I lost this person. I have an open job. Turnover's not good. It was a bad hiring decision. You could have all the skills in the world, but if you leave in 30 days, still a bad hiring decision. You weren't a good fit. Yes, you could do the job, you weren't interested. The quiet quitter is a type of turnover that's even worse. What does it cost you if you hire that poor performer, average, below average performer, that stays with you for 10 years? What's your lost opportunity? What could you have done with a better performer? So you don't necessarily want a whole lot of quiet quitters. They go through the motions, they show up, they do just barely enough, but it's not enough. And that all is related to your onboarding process. So one last polling question. How long is your formal, if you have one, onboarding process? 90 days, that's great. One out of two. Less than a day, 1 week, that's typical. I would encourage you to look and put forth a simple checklist. What do you want to accomplish during those 90 days? How do they get introduced to the culture of the organization? How do they get trained? How do they get cross-trained? Who do they go to for what? A lot of companies try and do that in a three-hour orientation on day one and say, okay, here's your leader. Go talk to them. They'll show you what to do. Is that leader getting held accountable for making sure 2 weeks in they're trained on these five tasks? 1 month in, they're trained on these 10 tasks. 1 month in, somebody from the organization is sitting down with them and saying, what met your expectations? What didn't meet your expectations? You've all heard of exit interviews. We always ask the person that's leaving, hey, why are you leaving? 90% of the people say money, even though reality is that's not the case, but it's something that the company can't argue with. I'd argue you should be looking at stay interviews. What's keeping you here? What do you like about your job? What do you like about the company? What do you not like? What do you wish could be different? Stay interviews give you more information because the people are currently working there than exit interviews do. Check in with them. Maybe there's something you can fix. Maybe it's some simple misunderstanding. Communication, though, is key. And then obviously employee engagement. Talk about how do we change or how do we establish the culture of our organization. Show appreciation, recognition, positivity. We heard a lot about that in the previous panel. Doesn't just apply to women in the workforce, it's for everybody. It is a single culture still. Communication is explaining the why behind the what. Not just communicating what they have to do. How does their job fit into the whole company picture? Should be part of the onboarding. How do you as a bagger impact how well we do as an organization? That needs to be part of their understanding to make them say, wow, if I could just do 5% more, or if I could reduce my quality mistakes, or if I see something else on this bag print that I know is wrong, what's the value to me bringing that up? And so creating a culture starts with that need and explaining the why behind the what. Obviously, having them focus on what's important gets measured. Individual growth and development. And I truly believe I've been one of the fortunate few for 40 years. I've loved what I do. I think work should be fun. Because if it's not, it's really a drag. As we already spend a lot more time at work, and it carries over. What are the things and simple things that you can do to make the workplace fun and get the team engaged with each other? I would argue, I bet a lot of you have a bunch of great things. Keep saying, and your stay interviews will tell you, okay, is it fun? Do we need to change up what we consider fun? What we think is fun? Is it fun for everyone else? Maybe, maybe not. Ask them. So, to wrap up, and I will leave a few minutes for questions, I've talked about the need for a paradigm shift. We've looked at the impact of demographics. It's new. Younger generations, they are different. New set of expectations, technology, make it friendly. But give good information and get good information. So with that, I will leave it open for questions because I know I'm all that stands between you and lunch. Questions, comments. I am never this clear, so I know you've got some questions going on. All right, you can get stuck with a joke if I don't hear any questions. Yes, sir.
Facebook,
So the question was, how do you post a job on Facebook? It's got more users. Two ways to do that. A lot of companies, what they do is they post announcements on their own company site. They get their employees to post just, hey, we're looking for people, apply here. There is a whole Facebook jobs section, just like there is LinkedIn jobs, where you actually, and you can pay to have them promoted, to, and you can geofence it. Only promote it to people within this geography. People with IP addresses outside that never see it. So you're very effective at spending your money and getting them engaged. But Facebook does have a whole section on posting jobs and promoting those. Thank you for the question. Yes, sir.
Still on Facebook, isn't it mostly trending towards an older demographic now, like over 40? And if so, what other sites can you use to reach the younger demographic?
Yeah, that's a great question. The question is, hey, aren't the demographics of Facebook getting older? They are, so is LinkedIn. Obviously, things like Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, there are other strategies for addressing those as job postings, and those are becoming. Still, you've got 2.8 billion, and while the demographics are getting older, there's still a ton of younger generation people that always get their Facebook feeds. They still look at what's going on because it's now linked to and owned by Instagram. So those two are connected. They can promote in both. But I do imagine you're absolutely right. Over time, Facebook will kind of phase out, and there will be something new from a social media or social recruiting standpoint. Again, I go back to your applicants and your employees are going to be some of your best sources, and having them disseminate it through their own social media networks. You know, so at the end of an application experience, if you're wanting to hire them, give them a badge. Let them go promote their badge. Hey, I had this hiring experience. I was certified as an employee for this company. Let them share that. They're an applicant. You're turning them into a recruiter now. I didn't talk about employee referrals and quantity. I don't know how many people use actual monetary, stay for 3 months, get a certain amount of money, stay for 6 months, stay for 2 years. A lot of companies, 2 years later, if a person has stayed and the person referring them has stayed, that means they're giving up like $2,500 as much as. So employee referral fees and systems need to be tracked, but they're a great source of applicants as well. With that, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day and conference. I do have cards if anyone wants to discuss this further. Obviously, you can tell I love talking about it and am happy to spend whatever time is necessary, even just kind of pointing you in right directions.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next session is going to be in the next room. Starting at 11:30, we have lunch set up, and we're going to do lunch first and then have our keynote presentation. So, I believe they're ready.
Somebody more.